gold crossed through 4,000 while we were on that trip, and now it's well through 4,000, hitting 4,200 this week as we speak. So obviously the timing was quite exciting to be on a tour at that time. I got that question a lot, Andy, on the tour. You know, is it a bubble? Is it we missed the rally? You know, the point I made is I felt like a farmer the last 6-7 years who planted a bunch of seeds. Perfect amount of rain fell, perfect amount of sunshine, and not a single plant was growing other than the gold price. And the final point I'll make is I saw the stat this morning, the 50 largest gold miners in the world, 50 largest publicly traded gold mining equities as of this morning have a $2 trillion valuation. That's less than 50% of NVIDIA's market cap.
Yeah.
The 50% of one stock in the S&P 500 is the entire global gold mining equity industry. So again, it just shows you how small this sector is in terms of market cap. It's, you can have the top 50 company gold mining companies in the world, or you can have 40% of NVIDIA. I think investors are missing right now is Canadian exploration and resource development companies. And why do I say that? Unfortunately, right now I live in Canada, and the Canadian dollar is by far and away the worst performing currency in the G7 by a landslide. So the US dollar, as your viewers probably know, part of what's been fueling gold is the US dollar is down, you know, 10 to 15% off the highs. So in dollar terms, the gold's getting cheaper for other countries to buy it, and that's causing an increase in the US price. The Canadian dollar is actually down versus the US dollar during this period. So what does that actually mean? Is that in gold terms, the Canadian dollar gold price, last night I hit my phone, all-time record, $5,950.
God.
It's almost, so you think $4,000 gold is a big number. Canadian gold is around $6,000 an ounce.
Michael Gentile, good afternoon or good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Good to see you, Andy.
It's really good to see you. Thanks for coming on. There's been quite a, gold's been just ripping. Let's talk about that. And now silver's following. You just got back from traveling over there with some of your companies. Tell me about why gold's ripping and tell me about your travels here. Let's start with that.
Yeah, I got back from Europe, actually. It was a five-day tour in Europe. We did 5 cities in 5 days. I had six of my biggest investments with me. A very well-received trip. We had about 300 to 350 investors over the 5 days. Probably 70-80% kind of dyed-in-the-wool commodity guys like yourself and myself, Andy, and probably 20% curious new investors, which I found very encouraging, you know, in terms of people that were either starting to buy physical gold but looking at equities for the first time or just looking at the gold sector for the first time. So nice, broad interest. It was interesting timing to be in Europe. I think gold crossed through 4,000 while we were on that trip, and now it's well through 4,000, hitting 4,200 this week as we speak. So obviously the timing was quite exciting to be on a tour at that time. I got that question a lot, Andy, on the tour. You know, is it a bubble? Is it we missed the rally? You know, the point I made is I felt like a farmer the last 6-7 years who planted a bunch of seeds. Perfect amount of rain fell, perfect amount of sunshine, and not a single plant was growing other than the gold price.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, there is this pent up demand that the plants are starting to sprout. So there's a lot of catch up to do for the last 6-7 years, particularly on the equity side, who have been woefully underperforming the gold price. And now the gold price continues to outperform. So these stocks, if you do them mathematically, are as cheap or even cheaper than they were when gold was $2,000 or $2,500 an ounce, because the gold price continues to outpace the equities. I also got the question, you know, about gold ownership, which I think is a really good point I was trying to make on my tour. If you look at like 2 years ago, Andy, the total wealth, total investable wealth in the world, 0.5% of the total investable wealth of the world was in gold.
Mm-hmm.
And even post this doubling of the gold price, post this, you know, increase in the value of the equities, I don't have the recent figures, but mathematically say it's 1.5% of total investable wealth in the world or in gold. That doesn't strike me as a massive overallocation or a massive bubble of investment. When you think about central bank balance sheets today have 25% of their global reserves in physical gold. So 1.5% of investor wealth is in gold, but 25% of central bank balance sheets are in gold. So to me, I think we've had a powerful rally, no doubt. I don't think you expect to see gold go up $100 a week for the next 30 weeks. But in terms of longer term, does that 1.5% have the potential to go to 5% or 10% over time, especially in the context of fiat debasement, especially in the context of de-dollarization? Absolutely. So I think we've had a powerful move in the context of a multi-year secular trend for gold. Could we have a pullback? Absolutely. Would it be healthy? Probably. but I think we're still quite early. And just based on the tour that we did, it wasn't like they were lined up at the door. It wasn't like the taxi drivers are talking about gold stocks. Like we're not there at all. So I think we still have a lot of adoption to go, particular on the investment side. And the final point I'll make is, I saw the stat this morning, the 50 largest gold miners in the world, 50 largest publicly traded gold mining equities as of this morning have a $2 trillion valuation. That's less than 50% of NVIDIA's market cap, right? So the 50% of one stock in the S&P 500 is the entire global gold mining equity industry. So again, it just shows you how small this sector is in terms of market cap. That's, you can have the top 50 company gold mining companies in the world, or you can have 40% of NVIDIA. So that, to me, doesn't strike me at all as a bubble. It doesn't strike me at all as we're overinvested here. We're just getting started. And when some of that money starts to roll out of tech into the gold sector, it's a very small market cap space. So you're going to start to see, real significant moves in market cap in some of these names to accommodate those new flow of funds. So really happy what I'm seeing. I still think we're quite early. Had a powerful move. So, you can be a bit, careful here in the near term, but I think in the long term, we're still very, very early in setting up for a powerful multi-year trend here.
Yeah, a lot of stuff right there. Thank you that you just said, and you talked a lot about actually long-term value as well as allocation. It's interesting about allocation. Did you see that Goldman Sachs, I want to say it was Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, one of them said 15% allocation to gold. And I think it was Morgan Stanley that said 20% allocation to gold, which is insane to me, which is, I'm all supported, I'm all gold, but I mean, just that they would come out and say that is just absolutely insane. It
So
seems
there you
to me
go.
like
In the context of a 1.5% kind of current allocation, I don't need 15 or 20. 5% would be extremely powerful for the equities and the gold price. So that's the world. I think gold is reasserting itself. It never wasn't, but reasserting itself as money and powerfully reasserting itself in the middle of the monetary system. I saw a headline yesterday, former advisor to the Treasury, I think Judy Shelton, was talking about the U.S. wanting to issue, for the 250th anniversary of the independence, gold-backed treasury bonds, like talking about that. And China clearly is moving towards some type of gold-backed currency over time. And so just having those conversations, reinserting gold back into the monetary system, you cannot have a 1.5% global allocation when gold's reasserting itself as the backer of money in the world again. So again, that just speaks to you how early we are in the adoption cycle. It's hard for guys like us who have been in the weeds for so long and kind of suffering through apathy. When things get good, you instantly think that I got to go hide under my desk. It's going to get bad again. But the reality, I think gold is finally going, starting to go mainstream. People start to understand the importance of it. So yeah, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan saying 20%, just an indication. What they're saying is you have to increase your allocation to gold. And most investors are going, I don't own any. Like you and I own a ton because we've been in this for many years, but most guys own zero. So they're kind of scrambling to see, do I need to own it? Should I own it? How much should I own? That's very positive in terms of new buying interest.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with you. And definitely great for the longer term and intermediate term trends here. Talk a little bit about, because you talk about value, still seeing value, and we were talking off camera, if you would, about value and searching for value. Talk a little bit about your process here. How do you find value? And then to all of our viewers and listeners, well, Michael and I will talk about a few companies. Talk about that.
Sure. So a few things I was giving some advice, and this is going to be hard because some investors, if they take this advice, may make less money in the short term. And so I'm going to cage that as a warning. But when the gold price starts to run like this and silver price starts to run, what ends up happening is, lower quality projects start to get financed. And actually, some of the lowest quality companies will actually run the hardest because they're companies that were either almost insolvent or very high cost producers or very mines that can never get built in a $3,000 gold price, but maybe have a chance in a $5,000 gold price. We've talked my process before, Andy, on previous interviews with you, where I talk about what I look to do is I buy a basket of juniors, kind of venture capital approach, 25 to 30 names. And I'm trying to pick really early on $20 million market cap companies. Which of these companies actually have a shot to become a mine? Because I'm taking a 5 to 10 year view. I'm buying 15, 20% of the company. I'm not looking to trade it. I'm not looking to buy it 10 cents and sell at 15 cents. I'm looking for a stock that goes from 10 cents to $10. That's really what I'm looking to do. So I'm looking for mines. And when you have these price commodity moves, the best mines are ones that can make money in $2,000 gold and can make you oodles of money at $5,000 gold. There's another school of thought where you go, I'm going to buy the mine that only works at $5,000 gold, hoping that gold goes to 7,000. But the reality is, of cycles and limited capital availability, the major mining companies only want to build the best projects. And so while these stocks will do really well in the short term as markets speculate on higher cost, lower quality projects, my advice to investors is stick with the higher quality projects. Stick with the ones that can get built in a low gold price. They'll make you a ton of money in a high gold price. But that may mean in the short term you may underperform. But if there is a pullback, there is a correction, or there is a less muted, more muted gold price in the future, you'll still do very well with those names. So that's the first bucket. In terms of value, for sure, it's a little harder to find like incredible value in the gold sector. I made my point on my tour that you look at the Lassonde curve, like a normal market environment, you have the middle of the road valuations. You have dramatic undervaluation, you have dramatic overvaluation, like we saw in lithium names 2, 3 years ago when lithium was just on fire. I think right, gold's gone from dramatically undervalued to properly to modestly undervalued right now in terms of the equities. So you got to look a little bit harder because before you could find 10 names that are all cheap. Now maybe you look at 10 names, 2 or 3 are expensive, 4 or 5 are fairly valued, and 2 or 3 are cheap. So doing more digging, but one pocket of value that I think investors are missing right now is Canadian exploration and resource development companies. And why do I say that? Unfortunately, right now I live in Canada, and the Canadian dollar is by far and away the worst performing currency in the G7 by a landslide. So the US dollar, as you probably know, part of what's been fueling gold is the US dollar is down, 10 to 15% off the highs. So in dollar terms, the gold's getting cheaper for other countries to buy it, and that's causing an increase in the US price. The Canadian dollar is actually down versus the US dollar during this period. So what does that actually mean? Is that in gold terms, the Canadian dollar gold price last night, it hit my phone, all-time record, $5,950.
God.
It's almost, so you think $4,000 gold is a big number. Canadian gold is around $6,000 an ounce, Canadian. And
Yeah, it's
because our
crazy.
economy is so weak right now, the labor costs and inflation in Canada are quite muted because our economy is stagnating. So you have the most profitable place, I think, in the world to mine gold right now on a margin basis is Canada. And you're seeing, Agnico Eagle stock do what really well, Alamos Gold do really well, but it hasn't quite filtered into the psyche of investors understanding the value of $6,000 Canadian gold on Canadian gold resource stocks. So for me, that's one area of my portfolio. And there tend to be higher quality companies in Canada. So at least the resource companies are. So they haven't moved as much in this upcycle. But they're never had better prospects for these companies. And there's a few of them we could talk about, but that's an area I think, don't say go buy every Canadian miner you can find, but there's definitely interesting value there, especially in the context of Canadian dollar gold prices.
Yeah, I would like to talk about those companies. Let me give a full disclosure. I'm going to ask Michael about one of the companies, and the reason I'm asking him that is because I'm selfish and I am an investor in this company, and it's well, very well run. But also, please, to all my viewers and listeners, and this is going to probably get 10,000 views. This is not investment advice. Do your own due diligence. Don't just let buy a company because Andy Millett talked about it or Michael Gentile talked about it. Do your own due diligence. And I highly encourage you to reach out personally to all these companies, get their investment packet and get on their mailing list and start developing, watch them and start developing a relationship with them. One of those companies, Michael, that I have, that you have, I actually have a couple that you have, but one of them I wanted to talk about was Maple Gold. I met Kieran, the CEO. I hope I get his title right, the CEO, president of the company that took over, I want to say, probably 18 months ago. He's really turned, I think, the project around. I think the world of him and love the project, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. You just recently joined, and I want to make sure you get the capacity right in Maple Gold. Why do you like them, and what did you see in Maple Gold?
Yeah, Maple Gold's a great example of value Canadian gold stock. So I followed the company very closely. A great project. 3 years ago, it wasn't in love with the management team at the time. They had a bloated G&A structure. I think they had over promotional type approach to the mining industry, kind of weak geology with a lot of hand waving. Kieran, the new CEO, came in 2 years ago. Been really impressed. Did an incredible job of heavy lifting. Cut G&A from like 5 million to 1.6 million, put in a crackerjack geology team that really understands the deposit, delivered some exceptional drill results, basically renegotiated a JV with Agnico. It used to be a 50-50 JV, which I don't really like 50-50 JVs because it takes a lot of M&A tension out of the story. was able to renegotiate that JV to give 100% ownership to Maple with an option for Agnico to buy in later at a much higher price back in. So any value created just go to shareholders directly. And I looked at all that progress that Kieran had made, and remarkably, 6 months ago, the stock was trading at a lower price when Kieran came in, despite incredible progress. And what I chalk that up to is just the name Maple Gold made a lot of investors nauseous when, from the past history. And so there was still that stigma, that stink around the story, and people hadn't taken the time to look at Maple 2.0. Kieran's refreshed the board. I joined as an advisor and 9.9% shareholder a few months ago. They just brought in some really solid long-term institutional shareholders in the last financing they did. So the company's completely renewed. It's not your old Maple anymore. And the company's sitting on, 3 million ounces of gold today in Quebec. I think that's going to be 4 to 5 million ounces on their next resource update. And
So
the
do I.
company got a sub-$100 million Canadian market cap. So you're buying ounces for $20 in the ground in Quebec, one of the best jurisdictions in the world for mining, when Canadian gold is $6,000 an ounce. So just that's a pretty compelling value proposition. And again, with a management team that puts shareholders first. I mean, Kieran's extremely devoted, works extremely hard. And so you got a good asset with a good team at a good valuation. And you understand why the stock is cheap. I always ask, why is the stock cheap? It's the past history that has left investors, not wanting to look at it. But everybody that does look at it again is like, wow, this is really incredible, the progress you've made. So I think it's just a matter of telling the story, getting more eyeballs on it, continuing to execute. The company's well funded for a big drill program, lots of catalysts ahead. And so that'll be I think a nice increased re-rating over time in that stock in terms of valuation.
Excellent. Before we go on to any other companies, I want to talk a little bit about that right there. Just a new management comes in and takes over a project. How do how do you find that? How can investors find that? And how do you look for that, if you would, other than just a press release?
Yeah, I've said the tagline before that you can't change geology, but you can change management, right? So
Right.
and that's the nice thing about this business is oftentimes projects get mispriced due to management, but the geology, the rocks don't change, no matter who's standing on top of the pile of dirt, right? And so that's interesting. I have a lot of projects, Andy, that I have in my orbit where I'm like, I like the geology, not comfortable with the team or the capital structure or other situations there. And so if I see those things change, I keep them on my watch list. If I see those things change, positively resolved, that's a strong signal for me to dig back in. It's exactly what happened with Maple. Dug back into the story, followed them closely. So it's really about following a lot of companies and being able to articulate why I don't own a stock. If I don't like the geology of a stock or geology of a company play, I'm never going to buy it because even the best management team can't turn a non-economic ore body into an economic ore body, right? So
Right.
there's some things I'll just never invest in. Other things, there's a reason I'm waiting for. I also learned early in my career that being the active voice of change, I'll do that once in a while, but it's extremely exhausting in terms of the effort it takes. So it has to be an exceptional opportunity. I prefer when the change happens organically and then be able to step in and refinance the company and back the new team. But it happens quite often that assets are owned by the wrong people in this business. And then when the right people come in, that's when real value is created.
Okay, so that I'm going to say that's advice, and that is great advice to all my viewers and listeners. Follow that. And really, I'll just paraphrase what Michael's saying is just make a list, start following great geology, and just make a list. It's not buying, it's making a list. And then management teams often do change. And when you get more comfortable and even pro management change, then it becomes a buy. Correct, Michael?
Correct. And good management teams, it's not coincidental, often find their way into good projects. So
Right.
the Radisson Mining Centre story I own in Quebec, it's been a great asset. It's had decent management in the past, but now it's got an A-plus management team. Matt Manson's come in, who's built multiple mines, Pierre Beaudoin, who built SilverQuest and Detour, Peter MacPhail, who built Young-Davidson. These guys come in because they know there's a mine there. And so when you see a quality management team migrating to a project that's kind of been stalled or moving at a less than optimal pace, it's often a good sign as well. So following good management teams into good projects because they know the recipe for success. And so that's always a good indication too when you see a good team seeking out a project, that's often a good follow. Don't buy them blindly because sometimes the stocks can be, the reputation is so strong on management that the valuation can get out of hand pretty quickly. But when you see a good team, Axe Cap Ventures is another story, AXCP. They took over the Converse project. That's the old Rox Gold team. They sold a project in Nevada for $1 billion. They sold a project in West Africa for $1 billion. All of a sudden, they roll into a $30 million market cap junior company that owns 6 million ounces in Nevada. those guys do their homework. And so when you see that team that's built two mines in the past and had billion-dollar exits suddenly walk in the door of a 30, $40 million junior, again, do your homework. It doesn't guarantee success, but typically those guys know what they're doing and they're not there for a quick flip. They're there to build something impressive over the long term. And so that's often a good indication. So following these management teams, if you see that combination of a quality management team going to a seemingly quality project, that can heavily de-risk the due diligence process for a new retail investor, let's say.
Excellent. Okay, you just dropped two other names. You can certainly work those out a little bit too more if you like, why you like them, and as well as in any other companies that you would like to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, so Radisson's in Quebec, high-grade gold. What I love about Radisson is it's got four mills, Andy, within 75 kilometers of its deposit.
That's
So
great.
you got roads, power, infrastructure, airports, towns that have been built for the mining community. So a lot of times investors don't realize the cost associated with putting in all the extra infrastructure. If you find a mine in the middle of nowhere and you're 500 kilometers away from civilization, then the roads, the power, the infrastructure, the towns, all that stuff can cost billions of dollars on top of the mine.
Right.
Whereas Radisson, I mean, you could not think about a better place to drop a new potential mine. I mean, Agnico Eagle is 3 kilometers behind the fence, the project. IAMGOLD, 15 kilometers away. Eldorado is 60, 70 kilometers away. Wesdome was within 100 kilometers of the project. So you've got producing mines that are hungry for mill feed. Radisson has 1.5 million ounces of like 8 gram gold, to 4 to 8 gram gold inferred indicated resource. And the company is now drilling out 140,000 meter drill program. They just announced today a massive drill program to expand that to 3 to 4 million ounces. So this is highly economic ore. It's going to find its way into someone else's mill over time. In the context of $6,000 Canadian gold price, it's really interesting. And the stock has had a nice little pullback. Just did a $30 million financing, and the stock is trading below the financing price despite gold making new highs. So I think it's a really great story. Full disclosure, I'm a director of the company. I'm a very large shareholder of the company. I'm quite involved there. But you've got the right team, the right assets, the right jurisdiction, and the right backdrop of Canadian gold to do extremely well, I think, in this market environment. Another one I'd talk about would be just other Canadian names I think are interesting for investors. Northern Superior Resources, ticker is SUP, 4 million ounces in Quebec. It's probably the biggest gold camp in the world, Andy, that investors are not aware of. So between IAMGOLD and Northern Superior, there's 12 million ounces of resource in the Chapin-Chibougamau camp. It's been consolidated down from six companies down to two. Canadian gold prices, Canadian gold producers are doing very, very well. I think it's an emerging area. Think like Finland, the Yukon, Guyana. These are major gold belts that investors have really recognized, and companies in those areas have gotten significant valuations. I mean, North Superior and Chapin-Chibougamau in Quebec still flying below the radar, about 4 million ounces, about $40 Canadian per ounce in the ground for a really high quality play, again, with great infrastructure. I love Quebec because it's got a big mining culture, well-developed infrastructure, easy to build projects. So that's another one I'd keep an eye on. And quickly, North Isle Copper and Gold, and Big Ridge Gold. North Isles in BC, Big Ridge is in Newfoundland. Those are two projects that I think have clear pathways to be economic deposits and development scenarios. Good management teams in place, mills and infrastructure again around the camp. And I think the nice thing about Canada too, Andy, is that oftentimes the infrastructure is already in place. So I'd point investors to North Isle and Big Ridge as other opportunities that are in Canada that are deeply undervalued today, and that will gain increasing attention as this market rally continues.
Got it. Real quick, and I think we'll end on this, is you just named a lot of jurisdictions, mostly I guess in Canada, and that's a theme here to all my viewers and listeners. But when you're evaluating a jurisdiction, what, not specifically as far as a jurisdiction you won't touch, but what's something you don't want to touch in a jurisdiction, if you would, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I made my point on my tour. I did mention a bunch of Canadian names, but I own names outside of Canada as well, Latin America and in Africa. I'm not jurisdiction centric. For me, I always ask myself a couple of questions, Andy, is can I get a mine built in this area? Like, what are the societal and government, impediments to having a mine built? Is there community support for it? So I always say when I talk about jurisdiction, there's some parts in Canada and the US that are less favorable to me than West Africa. There's just parts of
California, right?
US, California, where you're just never going to get a mine built. And
Right.
so investors say Canada good, US good, Africa bad. I don't like that kind of discourse. To me, mining is hyper local. And oftentimes in these, second tier jurisdiction, you can get your mine built a lot quicker. So what's the permitting pathway? What's the rule of law, taxation, Big no-fly zone for me, Andy, would be expropriation risk. Is there a risk the government just takes my mine from me after I've done all the work to build it? And then second one would be, is there strong and organized community opposition to a mine in that area? If that's the case, you can have all the other attributes, but if the community is opposed to it, it's going to be very hard to get that mine built. So jurisdiction to me is a case-by-case basis. I'm mentioning Canadian names today because I think they're just compelling value in the context of the current market environment, but I will look anywhere, any corner of the world where I think a mine can get built and I can get an attractive valuation and the project has the right attributes to be a mine.
Got it. So, Michael, we'll end with that, but I don't know because you're one of those guys that really likes to fly under the radar, if you would. I don't know if people can get in touch with you, or should I just post your LinkedIn here in the show notes so people
Yeah, I'm on
which
LinkedIn. They can find me on YouTube. I'm
Okay.
not a big social media presence, but if they Google me and see your show, they can see other stuff that I'm doing on YouTube as well.
Got it. I just want to give the love back to you. So I want to thank you so much to your for your time. You've been very gracious to me and to all my viewers and listeners. Michael's very gracious as well, off camera. To me, at least, it's been fantastic, as well as he has a great background and a frame of reference. And I love your process, Michael. Look forward to having you on again soon.
Thanks, Andy. Good seeing you.
It's really good to see you. Thank you.